Hey everyone, welcome to our next edition of Taking Stock. This is Steve Rosenstock. Really appreciate you joining us as always. Today I am really excited to invite Lorraine Makowitz and Carrie Francis to our discussion. Lorraine and Carrie are two people I really lean on heavily when we think about topics like how organizations should be driving greater engagement and collaboration amongst their talent pool. And that's really the topic that we're going to hit upon today. Obviously, so much of how organizations think about talent, think about engaging talent, hiring talent, developing talent has been altered in a lot of ways due to COVID. A lot of things have been accelerated, but perhaps some of the traditional norms and expectations have changed. And we're going to hit into those topics. It's a really fun discussion. Hope you enjoy it. And we'll talk to you on the other side. Thanks. Lorraine and Carrie, welcome to Taking Stock. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good. Well, Steve.
Lorraine, silent nods are not going to work. We need to verbally say hello.
I said hello. I was waiting for Carrie to speak first.
That's very nice of you. And how are you, Carrie?
I'm doing great. How are you today, Steve?
I am doing well. It's Friday. So thank you both for joining me. And this topic, Lorraine, you and I have been talking about this for a while as we worked on our trends paper together. And I know this is one that you're very passionate about. And Carrie, you as well, the topic of kind of very broadly, like this idea of kind of how do we foster engagement with our people, with our stewards, with our employees? How do we acquire talent more effectively? How do we develop talent more effectively? How do we collaborate more effectively? And Lorraine, when we were kind of looking back and doing the trends paper, there were a lot of kind of trends that we identified that were in a lot of ways changing the ways in which organizations are thinking about talent, regardless of the industry that you play in. And so many of those trends have either been accelerated or changed or tweaked or altered due to what we've experienced over the past year due to COVID, right? You think about, companies thinking about how do you drive collaboration and engage your employees more effectively? Well, obviously that's completely turned on its head, due to working in a virtual world like we've been. Carrie, I know you're really passionate about diversity and equity and inclusiveness. And you think about everything that's happened over the past year that has reprioritized some of those efforts for organizations. And it's become, part of, the everyday discussion and really become to the forefront with executives in companies. So I guess I'll pause there and just ask you both to kind of, if you think about this broader idea of kind of fostering engagement and driving, better engagement within the talent in your organization, how has that changed over the past 12 months, in your opinion? So I guess I'll ask either of you to chime in, because you guys were making fun. You were saying neither of you wanted to go first, but one of you is going to raise your hand and answer this question first.
I think if I can go first on this,
this is Lorraine, everyone, just to let you know.
This is Lorraine. Right. You will listen to the sound of my voice for a little longer. So I think what has, in my opinion, definitely accelerated the people aspect of organizations' engagement and culture has definitely been the disruption of everyone figuring out how to still do their jobs and work with each other and still grow their organizations in a completely new way.
Right.
When we think about what a lot of organizations were trending towards before COVID and before the pandemic, a lot of people were creating open office spaces and trying to figure out how to foster collaboration and create this cross-functional engagement across business units, across teams. And we were making so much progress on that. And now leaders and team members have had to turn that on its head, throw that out the window for an indefinite period of time in some cases, and figure out how do I start from scratch, from square one. And I think that uncertainty has made a lot of us stretch in different ways and think, how can we still foster collaboration, maintain culture and still give people opportunities to make a difference and ultimately deliver on all of these plans that they had built up towards for so many years.
Yeah, I think you bring up a ton of great thoughts, Lorraine, and I want to dive, we'll dive into some of them in a little bit more detail. And I'll challenge aspects of it, because I think that while I think it's very easy for us to say that collaboration in a virtual world is going to be more challenging. And yes, companies have had to completely re-alter their plans, but let's also look at ways in which we're able to be more efficient and perhaps leveraging, you know, technology and certain types of things to be able to collaborate more effectively. But we'll dive into some of those topics, certainly. Carrie, what are your thoughts if you think over the past year and what's changed and what's been impacted?
Yeah, I think as Lorraine was saying, right, the new use of the tools and technology that everyone's adopted during COVID is clearly the biggest acceleration. We've been looking at using collaborative tools such as Teams, Smartsheets, et cetera, for years, but organizations just hadn't been picking them up as quickly and weren't as accepting of them as they were kind of that real in-person meeting. And I think overall, the productivity tools that exist are pretty helpful for managing projects, teams, collaboration, et cetera, from a work perspective. I do think that we've seen some solid setbacks, though, due to kind of the transition to the fully virtual environment in the engagement between employees on a more personal level. So as you look at kind of that normal water cooler talk or that few minutes to get up and stretch and have a conversation as you're walking towards a meeting, that's all gone away. And as organizations have looked to put in more virtual collaboration activities, such as, you know, virtual happy hours and those sorts of things, at the beginning, we were seeing a lot of engagement, but people are just suffering so much burnout from all of the Zooms and calls and whatnot. They just don't want to spend their time doing that. So you're losing that one-on-one relationship.
Yeah, and I had an agenda of topics that I wanted to get through, and I know it's going to be thrown out the window because there's so much to dive into, you know, with that. Because I know for me personally, I feel just every single minute of every single day is planned and structured now in a way that didn't used to be. You know, there's no flex time. Every minute is, you know, what we're trying to do is we are trying to, in some ways, make up for that water cooler talk, like you mentioned, Carrie. Things that used to happen more casually are now planned and structured, right? As opposed to, hey, let's just collaborate and talk as we're walking down the hallway. No, let's set up 30 minutes so we could collaborate and talk, and let's structure it in a way. And because of that, we've become so over scheduled and over structured, and every single minute of every day is counted, that I worry a little bit about sometimes our mental health and our ability, you know, to kind of think creatively and just, you know, have that balance that we need in our lives. As you think about employees and organizations, we're all struggling with this, right? As, you know, we all are individually, but also as big companies, you know, more broadly, we're all struggling with this. What do you guys think?
Well, I think we as a group, knowing each other, can say that for us, you know, we build a lot more structure into our day, and perhaps that's how we collaborate with others. But then you think about, that's not the only type of person. That's not the only way that people work, right? So for some, it's this completely new phenomenon that they have to be so structured, and they struggle with that beyond just their day-to-day work. It's almost a new skill that a lot of people have had to build into their lives, let alone the mental struggle of still virtually collaborating, but also the work-life balance between needing to take care of families, needing to take care of your health with all of these things going on, and being able to balance what seems like an always on mentality for a lot of people. Yeah. So I think that it's almost this personal challenge that a lot of people are feeling. And how do you balance that with still meeting the goals of your team or meeting the goals of work, and it being accepted more organizationally?
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead, Kara.
I couldn't agree more, Lorraine. You know, I think the other thing that I would add on to that is leadership within an organization, right? It really is their responsibility to not only encourage, but kind of make space and make sure that everyone has that ability to stop, pause, you know, be it a 30-minute lunch break, encouraging focus time, you know, mitigating meetings over lunches, all of those sorts of things are things that are critical for leadership to promote.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think we need to lead by example in doing that. And we need to not continually make excuses in how we schedule our time. So I do want to transition a little bit. And I'm going to challenge us to look ahead. Right? I was pushing us to look back over the past year, and I think it's always healthy to do that. But I want to look ahead. When you think about talent, at the end of the day, whether we are manufacturing soda, diapers, paper towels, within the consumer products industry, whatever it might be, you still need to manage talent. You're going to be as successful as an organization based upon the people that you have and your ability to kind of acquire talent first. So if we think about the challenges that companies are facing right now in terms of how they're acquiring talent, think about, you know, the gig economy and that kind of challenges things, certainly. What are some things that organizations should be doing to ensure that they're getting the right people on board that are aligned with their organizational purpose and their organizational mission? What are some things that companies should be doing more effectively?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Steve. I think one of the things that we're seeing is that recruiting is switching from more of that order taker position to becoming more of a strategic partner, where they're really focusing on high value activities to actually help deliver and create business value. You know, making sure that we create the environment for recruiters to be successful and giving them the space to kind of help shape their future and have them determine how they can actually create and deliver value will get them a lot more bought into the organization and their end goals.
Yeah. So, and Lorraine, I know we've talked about this a lot, Lorraine. So when they're thinking about why they're going to join an organization, it's much more than the job, right? There's a lot of other factors that are mm-hmm. going to come into play as to why an individual might decide to join a company. So talk a little bit about that.
For sure. I mean, if we segue and relate not just the organizational purpose, but just thinking about everything that's been going on in the world over the past year in terms of the importance of brands and organizations having a very clear purpose and making sure that those values are aligning with their consumers. Well, I think that same mentality is so critical, and organizations are finding that they need to do that even more when they're hiring talent. Many people are no longer looking for a job that's just simply a job. They want to know that they can deliver value, that they can make an impact on an organization, but also that their core values, whether it be diversity, equity, inclusion, whether that be just broader support and advocacy for the important initiatives and just things that are going on in the world.
Sustainability is an example, right?
Absolutely. Giving back to communities, all of those things are table stakes. They're becoming more important for people when they're aligning themselves to a job. And so I think it's no longer about, are the person's skills aligned, but are their values aligned? And that's what is truly going to make a more cohesive and kind of collaborative organization. And so for when recruiters are you know, looking for this type of talent and trying to sell an organization, right, to new hires, it's just beyond, it's beyond the resume. It's beyond the, can you do this job right? But is this organization a good fit holistically? So I think that's a change we're going to see becoming a lot more concrete and just something that people are going to want beyond the pay, beyond being an asset, but just a real supporter.
Yeah, I love that, Lorraine. I think you mentioned purpose. I kind of think about it as an alignment of purpose. I think that any individual employee wants to know that their purpose is aligned with that of the organization and vice versa. And the way that the world is now, where you have, you know, a lot of employees who potentially, you know, certainly the millennial is kind of, you know, the millennial generation is a great example of that, that if the organization doesn't fit its values sets and its mission and its purpose, well, they'll go find somewhere else to work. And in more and more, it's incumbent upon the organization to make sure that they are purpose driven in a way that's going to align with, you know, the types of people that they want to bring in. So let's assume that we've got those people in the organization. We've acquired the talent effectively. The next challenge for organizations would be, how do we kind of develop and grow talent, which is hard, because in my experience, you've got people who are incredibly ambitious. They want to grow. They don't want to feel as if there's any sort of stagnation in their careers. People want to move quickly. They want to. It's not just what are you doing, but is how is this enabling me to grow in my career? Again, align with my mission, align with my purpose, but I want to constantly be moving and developing. How do organizations think about that? How do organizations ensure that we're getting the job done today, but we're also providing the opportunities for growth for the people within their business?
I think there's a lot of different ways to do it, right? I think one of the things we have to remember as we talk about the different generations is that while all generations want to do what they consider to be meaningful work, how they classify meaningful is different. So if you look at more of your traditionalists, right, they tend to want to focus more on overcoming challenges. Your baby boomers tend to be more goal-oriented, whereas your Gen X is, you know, more focused on a work-life balance. And so making sure that you're targeting the different things that are appealing to different generations and what they all find meaningful is critical. You've got to be able to structure, target, and manage your employees based on their own intrinsic motivators. And obviously getting an understanding of what that is for each individual across a generational level as well as an individual level is going to be critical to be able to drive them towards success.
Yeah, I think, Lorraine, curious your point of view on it. My quick comment to that, I agree, certainly generationally, we need to come in. I also think I've been guilty in the past of making some, let's say, stereotypical assumptions based upon kind of generational, you know, demographics. And I think we need to be careful in that regard. We are so, and I just did it earlier, we're so quick to just dump everything in the millennial bucket. You know, I think we need to be careful in that regard.
Yeah, there's been some really interesting research that shows that while everyone really wants to do meaningful work and that they want to do this based on their own intrinsic motivators, because their intrinsic motivations are different than other generations, they feel like every other generation is doing it for a financial gain instead of for the intrinsic motivator. So that balance and creating that alignment and making sure that everyone knows, kind of has that clear path and role and how it connects straight to their intrinsic motivators is a huge way to overcome that.
Yeah, because I mean, you have people working across generations like we've never seen. As the workforce gets younger and older, we're going to have, you know, companies need to think about, how do I deal with, you know, that aging population, the baby boomer generation that's still in the workforce, working with, you know, those younger generations, and how do you drive some of that, you know, collaboration? You know, Lorraine, I know it's something that, you know, you were talking about earlier, kind of that collaboration with an organization, just an interesting dynamic of kind of cross-generational collaboration is another thing that companies need to think about.
Absolutely. And I think bridging off of Carrie and Steve, what you've both been sharing about managing each individual's and understanding each individual's perspective, what's motivating to them, I think then there's also this translation of even a bit of expectation setting for teams that are collaborating together. It's one thing to know and understand the manager to employee relationship, but then being able to manage those perceptions and understanding what's motivating to the entire team can really impact the kind of overall collaboration and just understanding of, how do I work well with this person? Especially when we don't have the water cooler talk to get to the heart of that as quickly or as easily as we used to. I think it's really important. And in addition to the generational aspect of it, Steve, what you had mentioned a bit earlier as well was how the gig economy and gig workers are really impacting organizations a lot. I think we're seeing this acceleration of more leaders looking into how can gig workers supplement this need for additional help, with the amount of work that needs to be done. And there's been interesting research about how when gig workers are brought onto a team of perhaps those that, you know, are part of the full-time organization, there's a lot of expectation management around that as well, because of this idea of, you know, is someone going to take over my position? What happens to my role? What opportunities for growth do I have when these different, it could be generations, it could be, you know, external vendors, whatever it is, right? So it becomes even more important for job security and just feeling good about your own position to really know, well, what's the purpose of this group or this team, and how does that impact my job now and into the future?
Yeah, it's great perspective. And building upon that, and the last topic that I wanted to get your all's thoughts around, we hit upon it earlier, was around the topic of kind of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We hit it upon it, kind of the social impact and kind of its alignment with individual's purpose and a company's purpose. But I want to think about it as we think about diversity of thought and inclusion to ensure that we are, when we collaborate as teams, we're incorporating that diversity of thought and all different perspectives. I would love to hear your thoughts around why that's so important for companies to have that diversity of thought and to ensure that we are, as we're making decisions and as we're driving strategy, we are accounting for as many different perspectives as possible. Because I think that's something we talk about, kind of cross-generational collaboration. But I think a diverse mix involved in the decision-making and strategy setting is also critical for companies. What do you guys think?
Absolutely, Steve. I couldn't agree more. I mean, when you look at diversity, right, we have to take it across all aspects, not just gender, ethnicity, age, right? There's so many different facets that you can compare, and everyone's different experiences enable them to bring a different perspective, which kind of mitigates the risk of groupthink and really is the foundational kind of area for you to get to new innovative thoughts and experiences. And when we look at talent as a whole, right, just attracting diverse talent is not enough to kind of make it stick. You have to make sure that you're making your organization overall inclusive and equitable as well, because if people don't see people like them at the table, then they're not going to stay with your organization. And then you're going to have kind of all of the high costs of employee turnover and just the damage that happens to the culture of the organization overall from that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we were talking about talent acquisition before, Lorraine, and this is something that, you know, people are is critical. And you see, you look at any, in terms of how organizations are promoting and marketing themselves or how they are focusing their recruiting, diversity, equity, inclusion is top of the list in terms of how it is that they're marketing themselves and how they're positioning themselves as organizations. But talk a little bit about, you know, your thoughts around why also that's so important in terms of how you behave and how you collaborate within a company.
Absolutely. Carrie, I think you touched on an important piece around this idea of it's so important to have these diverse sets of experiences and backgrounds, because it could really actually accelerate the ability to be more creative, to think of new ideas, not just for, you know, delivering the product or service that your organization might be, you know, responsible for, but also building a better and a richer culture that really hits on those values of diversity, equity, and inclusiveness that organizations are striving to do. Because to your point of people won't be motivated to stay if they don't feel that they see, you know, other people with similar backgrounds or feel welcome to that type of, you know, inclusive environment. I think that's where it's so important for organizations to kind of act on, right, and follow through with how are they making more processes and tools and just environments where everyone has a voice and everyone's, you know, opinion can be heard. So you're actually creating more sustainable change and progress towards being more inclusive. So ultimately, there's a lot of work to do, but the organizations that are, you know, not just making the change or ending by hiring, you know, someone or acquiring the right talent, but continuing the work and knowing that we all have a lot of progress to be made. But if we are truly bringing in the right people and listening to them and just dedicating the time to enriching those values, we'll continue to see better and forward progress.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, Lorraine, I agree 100%, right? We are making progress, but we still can't say we're anywhere near where we need to be. If you look at some statistics over the last 10 years, right? Within the last 10 years, there were nearly as many males in CEO positions of Fortune 500 companies, males specifically named John, as there were female CEOs, which is outrageous, right? If you think about kind of the even more underrepresented groups, which obviously females have been one of the kind of top focuses for diversity over the last 20 years. If you look at the even less represented groups, that number is even more staggering. And when you then apply that to a business position, right, besides the fact that it's just the right thing to do of creating a more diverse, equitable, inclusive environment, the bottom line impact is huge, right? So if you look at some of the impacts of feeling like you belong in an organization, if you feel like you're more like, if you feel like you belong, you're 75%, you see a 75% drop in sick days, a 50% drop in turnover, a 56% increase in job performance, which ultimately can lead to an annual savings of about $52 million for an organization with 10,000 people. So like besides the right thing to do on a human level, it's the right thing to do on a financial level.
I love that point, Carrie, around how we often think of people as assets, and it's more of the what am I paying for someone and what is that cost? But if you add up the more intangible benefits that aren't as easy to see off the bat, you will see such a greater return in overall benefits of what we were talking about, of whether it's work-life balance or a better, more engaged group that ultimately impacts the culture of the organization. There's so many benefits that we can see when we really don't lose focus and then don't, you know, let the foot off the gas to make organizations a better place to work for everyone and bridging more of those gaps that we still have a lot of work to do to get there.
Yeah, we have a ton of work to do. I think we've made small step changes and continue to. I think, Carrie, your point, and Lorraine, as you built upon it, this, just because it's the right thing to do, companies have struggled still with doing it. I think the more and more they realize that not only is it the right thing to do, but like you said, you know, Carrie, it's good for business. You know, I always think about, you know, having, you know, 10 white guys in a boardroom determining what is the right, you know, marketing strategy to reach, you know, a 18-year-old like demographic. You know, it's like, what are we doing? Let's have a more diverse mix of people who could drive, you know, our strategy. That's just good business. Forget about it being the right thing to do. It's also really, really good business. And unfortunately, sometimes it takes companies, they need to see the business case in a lot of these things to do, which is awful, but it's true. And, you know, we've talked about that a lot on this podcast as well. Thank you both very much. Our time is short, unfortunately. I think we could talk for a long time about these topics. And I know we kind of hit upon the tip of the iceberg with a lot of them. But I really enjoyed the conversation. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're both very busy. So hopefully you enjoyed it. It wasn't too painful, was it?
No.
No, let's keep going. Continue the conversation.
Part two. I'm ready whenever you guys are. But thank you very much for joining. And have great weekends, and we'll talk soon.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
All right. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Lorraine and Carrie, thank you very much for your participation. Let me first say, and they might get mad at me for saying this, but I work really closely with both Lorraine and Carrie, and they're two of the smartest people I work with. But they were a little bit anxious about being on a podcast. I guess like anyone, you know, would, I suppose, for the first time. But they were fantastic. They did a great job. So thank you both for participating and sharing your perspectives. I love the topic of discussion at the end around diversity and inclusiveness. We've talked about it a lot on this podcast, and I firmly believe that organizations, the more that they're able to incorporate diverse thought and inclusivity of thought into their decision-making process, they're going to be better off for it. And like we said, not only are they going to be doing good, but it's good for business. And my hope, if there's one takeaway that our listeners take from this discussion, it's just that. So thank you again for listening. I really appreciate your continued engagement. And I look forward to upcoming discussions. We'll catch up soon. Have a great one.